Bonjour, comment allez-vous?
Ah, très bien. Et toi?
Très bien, je très jolie.
Oui, c'est parfait. You may be wondering, is this Natalie and Kristen's podcast, or have I stumbled upon a horrible French podcast?
Of two American girls speaking with bad French accents.
Friends, this is the Create podcast, but we are speaking French in honor of the fact that France has just won the World Cup. Allez les Bleus! And because I'm an honorary lover of the French now, we are in celebratory mode.
And you may have heard in the background just now our dear friend Rebecca Falconberry from
Rebecca
Broadway,
Falconberry.
From the Broadway stage.
She's posing, but she doesn't realize there's no video.
Yes. But you can imagine how cute she is posing on Natalie's couch.
Kristen and I can see each other, but the podcast listeners can only hear us.
Oh.
Yes.
They have to use their
imagination. But to give everybody a visual, Rebecca looks adorable. She's in beautiful overalls, and she's sitting on my couch looking like a goddess.
And to give a
You're
little
the
bit
best
more. And to give a little bit more of a visual, Natalie and I, again, are in separate locales. Natalie's in New York. I'm in LA. And now we're just getting to stare at each other's beautiful eyes as we talk about things of the heart.
Which is our favorite thing to do.
Ever, ever.
Ever, ever. So we bring you this podcast today full of celebration, full of l'amour, full of excitement. Actually, speaking of excitement, there is one thing we should mention, that we have one spot left for our Italian adventure.
Uno, who will be the lucky last person?
It could be you. If you're listening right now thinking, wow, I've been thinking about that Italy trip. Now it could really be me. I could just go and press one little click of a button and it could be me. My life could change.
With the click of a button. Someone's going to be holding my hand.
Oh, this they are. And so if you have not been following this journey, we are going to Italy with our dearest friend, John DeVisi. We're teaching our pleasure retreat. So pleasure, desire, activation. And we're not talking about the cheap pleasure of, you know, just having a beautiful glass of wine or, you know, doing things like that. Of course, those are the kinds of pleasures that we also love to partake in. But we're talking about the deep pleasure, the joy, the bliss. The yogis call it the ananda or the anandaha, that is deep inside of you, that is always available to you no matter what the external circumstance in your life is. And if you're in that place of saying, well, I just can't access that place because of my bank account or because of my job or because of an illness or because of my situation, we have really learned how to empower ourselves to connect to that place no matter what the circumstance. And sometimes it does take, because the neural pathways are so strong in our pain body, it does sometimes take shaking things up and being in a new place, in a new environment with new people. What's really exciting about a retreat like this is you're having an opportunity to travel solo with a bunch of other people that are seekers in the same way you are. So you find this immediate sense of friendship, collaboration, community, love, support of people that are rooting for you to have your dreams and your best life. So it really is a phenomenal way to make very big leaps in this area of your life. So if it's something you're interested in, that spot may have your name on it.
I like to think of it as the authentic pleasure of being your truest self. There is a pleasure that is beyond the sensory pleasures that is a soul pleasure.
I love that. The soul's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good podcast.
All right, let's jot it down.
All right. But for today, I'm really excited because Kristen came to me lit on fire with this idea. And it's been burning inside of her for a little while. And now we're getting an opportunity to talk about it today. And Kristen, when you sent me these notes, I mean, I kept writing in the margins, wow, wow, wow. It was just everything I want to talk about. And I feel like it's really pertinent in my own life and what I'm seeing around me and a lot of people. So I'm super excited to jam today.
Me too. And I think this first came in about a year and a half ago when I watched the work of Dr. Shefali, who wrote the book, The Conscious Parent. And I remember seeing her talk on Oprah's tour, right? And literally freaking out and posting it on the Create page and sending it to everyone I know, being like, is everyone hearing what this lady is saying? And watching it over and over again. And I know you like caught the wave, got like fresh on what she was doing and was like, I'm going to go buy the book. And
yeah, I bought the book for myself. I think I bought like 4 or 5 of the books.
Yes.
And it was like anyone I knew who was a parent, I was like, can we all read this book together? Even though I'm not a parent, I feel so connected to this material that I can only imagine as a parent how much it would be completely life-shattering.
Well, I kept watching it again and again, and I wanted to be like, am I the only one that is hearing something that is beyond just a message of parenting, but it can go to so many different areas in our life, and especially the parts of our lives that we want to control. So I felt like, as someone who is a creator, when we create, we talk about create as like we're giving birth to something. We're bringing something from inside our soul out into the world. And in doing that, you are being the parent of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think we could take what she says and apply it to our creativity and to our careers. And in the same way, I also think she has a very profound message that is also helpful when applied to our romantic relationships.
Agreed. Agreed. And it's interesting because in the chakra system, the energetic anatomy of the Eastern traditions, they talk about that your second chakra is called one's own abode. And the second chakra is anatomically placed in kind of the uterus, the lower pelvis area. And it is the birthplace of three things. It's the birthplace of our creativity. It's the birthplace of our emotions. And it's the birthplace of like what our purpose and our dharma is on this planet. So I think it's really fascinating that this one area of our body is the birthplace, the womb.
It's a birthplace
of all three of those things. So any way that we are in heightened emotion, in creativity, and in our purpose, everything gets born from this place in the same way we give birth to a child. It's really fascinating.
And that's why those concepts work. That's an amazing link, Natalie. Thank you so much for that.
Of course.
So, okay. So Dr. Shefali, we're going to start with this like one idea. She says that having a child will show us a mirror to our undeveloped self, because we want a child to represent the self we haven't become. So this is when all the alarm bells go off inside of me and go, well, isn't that what we do with our creative projects and careers? It's like, we want them to be successful and glamorous and validating because we don't feel that way inside.
Right.
So we long for and we cling to an external image, hoping that that thing will make us feel that way inside.
Right. There was this quote I posted in our Create Facebook page the other day that said, the dream can never be bigger than the dreamer. Yeah. And yet we have this idea of such a low worth of ourselves that we think that if we create something bigger than ourselves, it will show us, okay, I am worthy. Okay, I can believe in myself. Okay, I can be confident. But it's actually the other way around, that we are so worthy that that's why these big, beautiful dreams can come out of us, because we are so complete and whole already. We just don't see it that way. So we try to correct that with our creation.
Well, and we often talk about our dreams are here to grow us, right? That I think the place where we can get off base is we think we had this dream and then we're supposed to raise it. We're supposed to grow it. We're supposed to do all these things and make it into something, as opposed to we were given this dream, this vision. It is grace that we got this vision, this dream in the first place, and it has come to do its work, and we are to be in relationship with it. And if we attune to it, it will expand and grow us into the person that can hold that dream, right? So where we can get off base, I think, is when We put so much pressure on ourselves to make our outer reality look like this inner vision, this idea of what we think it should be. And we get mad at our current state of our, whether the current state of our creativity, like how the screenplay is coming out, or our career, what it's looked like, what the manifestation of it is. And really the reason why we want it to be all bright and shiny and beautiful is because it's reflecting back to us a part of us that feels undeveloped, right? But the reason it is doing that is to show us where we, where the healing is possible. So if you can use it as an indicator of, oh, here is where it has come to heal me and grow me, then we enter in a different conversation with it. So in the same way, if we don't feel lovable or secure, we often want our romantic partners to do things that create that illusion. And so one of my favorite things to always think about is when people say, well, my partner's just not meeting my needs, or you don't meet my needs. What they're really saying is, I don't like how my romantic partner's freedom and free will makes me confront my undeveloped self.
Woo! Mm-hmm. Wow, right?
Right? It's so uncomfortable to me when you do something that doesn't match my image of how it should be. I find myself in pain. And because I find myself in pain, I want to control you or make you not do that thing again. But the pain is the gift. The pain is not because they're doing that thing. It's because we're actually having to face something within us that needs to be healed. So when that thing comes up, it's like, that's Christmas. That's a gift. That's awesome. That's
because the pain is the pointer to what the next stage of evolution is. And if we don't recognize where we need to grow, then we don't put the effort into the growth. And then the growth doesn't happen and we get stagnant and we get stuck. It's also one of those things, I always remember Louise Hay talking about this, like, don't try to learn other people's lessons for them. We think that it's a really beautiful thing if you love someone and they're in pain to take it away and to do something to make them feel better. But ultimately, if that's their lesson to learn and you continue to learn it on their behalf, they are going to keep getting that message over and over because it's theirs to learn and you're doing them a disservice and stunting their growth. And really, controlling them.
Yeah, that's right.
By continually trying to take their pain away, because that pain is holy and it's for them to go to the next level.
That pain is their gift. You know, it's like when our parents tried to make us be happy, as opposed to just letting us cry and realizing that it was beautiful and wonderful to experience all of the emotions in the human experience, and that every single one of them is sacred.
Right.
You know what I think of too with this is, I think of all the people that I went to college with who eventually got frustrated with their careers and like left the business, but they were so talented. It's like, you know, you and I talk often about your dharma is never going to stop knocking. It's never going to go away.
You can't quit your dream because it's not quitting you.
Exactly. So instead of bailing when it doesn't look like what you want it to look like, that's a gift. When your career doesn't look like how you want it to look like, it's another Christmas day. Like, oh, this is exciting. This is an invitation.
I always think about the time when I was in my early 20s and I first moved to Toronto to be an actress and I got an agent and I started doing auditions. And I remember having 2 or 3 years of really great success and feeling, this is what it's like. And kind of like on paper, it was all moving the way I always thought I wanted it to. And I remember the time when it started getting slow and I stopped getting as many auditions. And of course, at the time you think, what am I doing wrong? There must be something. I must be off. I must have to fix something. Why is the world against me all of a sudden? What went wrong? And you spend all of your time ruminating, asking these questions of what's wrong. When really, in those years when my career really, really kind of died out of nowhere, that was when I got really interested in spirituality.
Yes.
And the gift of spirituality in my life has been the most transcendent thing. And not only has it done nothing but support me in doing my dreams. It's made me such a better artist than I could have ever been without that connection, without that intuition, without a meditation practice. I would never have become the creative, inspired artist I am today. I would never be thinking outside of the box the way I do now. So it's this interesting thing where we often look at the form, and if it's not what we think we want, we shame it. We think there's something wrong. Instead of saying, what if this thing that is showing up is the thing that's going to help me in the long run be more than I could have ever been without this situation? And we know this. Anytime anyone's ever had the experience of, let's say, you speak to someone who's survived a terrible illness or a terrible accident or a death, those are actually the moments when people will say, that was when I learned who I really was. That was when I learned more about myself than I ever could have. And so in a way, you do end up having the most immense gratitude for those moments.
They're our biggest teachers. It's an exciting thing to go, ooh, if I know all of life is for me, there is a reason this is coming towards me. It must be a gift, because that's the only thing the universe ever gives. Everything is grace. So Dr. Shefali says that parents project upon children our own longing to become whole. So I think our suffering in life comes from the fact that we want this wholeness to be reflected back to us when we're not willing to do the inner work. So we want our partner to treat us this certain way, right? We want our career to look like this. But if we're not ready to do the work to feel whole internally without anything changing on the external, we can't actually get that wholeness reflected back to us.
Exactly.
We have to surrender giving up the image of something looking good and getting back into the relationship of our inner energy.
Wow. Yeah, that is so profound. And I think so much of the time, you know, and I can speak about it even with my own parents. I know that my own parents were the king and queen of sacrificing so their kids could have what they didn't have.
Yes.
And I think so many parents live in this way, but there's no greater gift to give your children than you living your own dreams, your own best life, your own wholeness, your own possibility, your own inspiration. That's the way you teach children what's possible. Otherwise, it becomes pressure and expectation for the child to achieve, or else it's not only on them, it's also that they're letting you and your life down.
That's right. It frees everyone, right? Mm-hmm. So when you actually take a stand and say, I'm going to live out of my heart and release everyone else from having to fulfill me, it frees them to go deeper into their journey of self-love and their self-exploration. So
exactly.
You know, she says, and I love this, that the need for things to look or be or behave a certain way show us that, and this is her quote, that we are coming from a state of scarcity. And that really hit me when I was like, that need for something to fit a mold shows our fear. And I even think it shows our mistrust of the universe.
Right.
And she talks about exactly what you were just saying, that a parent has to let a child become what they want to become. And I wonder if we could even extend this further and say, I'm going to let my creative project become what it wants to become. I'm going to let my career become what it wants to become. I'm going to let it tell me. Like, I'm going to get into deep listening with it because it has something to teach me. This thing that is coming through me has come to bring me back to wholeness, and I'm going to miss it.
Yes, we're going to miss it. I remember, Kristen, you used to talk to me like, we've always had a lot of conversation about abundance, for example.
Yeah.
And it, part of the conversation was, whenever you see one job, one avenue of money as your source and supply, and you start putting pressure on, I really need this to give me more money, or I need it to come from this one source, what you end up doing is cutting yourself off from money coming from a lot of different sources that you could have never imagined in your paradigm. And it kind of makes me think that with our dream too. what it makes me think of is that we as human beings are dual. We are both spirit and human. We are form and formless. This is something we've talked about a lot. The yogis call it Purusha, which is the spirit, the consciousness that you are, that never changes, that never dies, that nothing can happen to. And then we are the form, which is our body, which also includes our mind and our thoughts and our emotions. And we are this dual reality, and that all of life is our experience of remembering ourselves as consciousness through the contrast and experience of being in our form. And that's how we learn. But what it makes me think of is our dream is all formless, right? That idea for that screenplay that drops in, or that idea for the dream restaurant, or the idea of, you know, how to decorate or how to create a meal or how to do a scene in an acting class, that is formless. And it drops into our form to educate us, to inform us. But what we have to remember is when something is formless, when something is spirit, it's timeless, which means it actually comes also from the future as it does from the past, because there's no such thing as time in the energy of spirit and consciousness. So we have to trust that whatever drops into us from the world of spirit is the absolute best possible thing. But we in our form can't necessarily see that. So it becomes our opportunity to get into deep relationship with cosmic consciousness, with divine, with the source of love, whatever you call that, to say, I trust that whatever drops in has knowledge that my form doesn't have yet.
That's
it. In the same way, our children come in fresh from the formless. They have knowledge that we have forgotten because we've been in form a lot longer.
That's right. They've come to teach us,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Always. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think that, you know, if we can think about it that way of like, ooh, I'm going to learn something now. Ooh, it's come to teach me now. So there's no more, you know, she talks about this too of like, I'm like, I'm just going to jump ahead in my notes, but of giving up this idea of like hierarchy, right? With parenting,
right.
Of like, I'm the parent, I'm the boss, you're the child, you obey. And don't we do that with our creativity? I'm the
yes.
one that tells you what it's supposed to look like or how you're supposed to behave. How many actors go, I'm making choices in this audition and I need to now execute these choices I've made beforehand, as opposed to there is something alive and that happens through the vessel of me when I show up and allow it to do what it wants to do through me. And that takes a lot of trust in the present moment, right?
Exactly.
Right. It takes a lot of trust to go, I'm going to allow myself to be a vessel, to be a vehicle, and know that I always get what I need in the moment. And if I'm listening and paying attention, there's something that is bigger than me that will move through me.
Exactly. And that really is the exercise with every relationship.
Yes.
Am I in control? Because if I am, that's coming from fear or scarcity. Or am I in deep surrender, which comes from trusting that I'm safe and everything that happens is for me.
Yes.
And even if it's like, I always say, I think it was Marianne Williamson who talks about you can either plan for the disaster or expect the miracle. And many of us spend much of our time planning for the possible disaster, right? So in case something bad happens, let me think about that possibility and plan for it. So if and when it does happen, I feel ready and prepared.
Yes.
But all we do is put energy into exactly what we don't want. And then that thing that we don't want inevitably has so much energy and charge behind it that it ends up happening. And then we say, thank goodness I planned for that because it happened. But it's almost like the planning of it makes it inevitable that it will happen.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, have any of us ever been in a moment that was really traumatic or really difficult? And no amount of planning makes it easier. You just traumatize yourself in the planning of it, and then you are re-traumatized when it actually happens. There's no amount of planning that when your heart gets broken, you know, no amount of preparation for my heart might get broken, so I'm going to put walls up, actually makes it better. Your heart still gets broken.
That,
so the alternative is you say, I want to live in a way where I constantly expect the miraculous. I constantly see the universe and the world is for me. I constantly see whatever my romantic partner is doing as something for me to gauge more insight about myself from. It has nothing to do with them. It has to do with the insight and choices and decisions I get to make from the contrast of that behavior. And everything that my dream offers me, whether it feels stalled, whether it feels like it's moving too fast, whether it feels like it's overwhelming me, whether it feels like I'm totally disconnected from it, is a point of power as long as I choose that perception.
That's exactly right. And I feel like, you know, when on the tip of like romantic relationships, we forget that they're a living, breathing entity to listen to. And we can get in trouble when we impose our demands or requirement on it, that if it's so easy and people want to do it all the time, is project blame onto their partner. If he or she were different, then I would be okay. As opposed to, ooh, they're different than me. And in their differentness, they have deep intuitive wisdom. They have come being exactly who they are to bring me back to wholeness. And so my job then becomes to surrender what is coming up into this relationship and let it teach me something new, right? This somehow has come to return me back to wholeness. So yes. I like to think of like, oh, they betrayed you? Fantastic. Like I go back to Christmas morning. This is so exciting. So what does that betrayal bring up, right?
Yes.
Oh, you were left? Oh my goodness. Okay. So what then comes up? What do you feel? What is going on in that undeveloped self that now wants to come back to wholeness? So instead of this kind of blame going outwards on how dare they, it's ooh, this is a yummy moment. This is a fresh moment. If everything is always love from the universe, how has this come now to transform me and my own love affair with myself?
Yes, it always comes back to the self. And this actually makes me think of something that's not in our notes at all, but I know you don't care if I go on a riff here.
I love
it. Osho has this talk that he does about the difference between reaction and responding. And what he says is specifically in romantic relationships, and I even think with our dreams and definitely with our children, we're always reacting, we're never responding. And what he says the distinction is a reaction is always based on the past, and a response is always based on just the here and now, just like you were describing, what's the here and now moment. So for example, if I have had my heart broken in the past, and now I'm in a new relationship, and I'm looking for ways that they might break my heart, or they say something and it maybe reminds me of that old heartbreak, then I'm actually not responding to this new human being in front of me. I'm reacting to the old one that I'm no longer even with anymore. Mm. And so there was this beautiful story about the Buddha, where the Buddha was meditating with all of his disciples, friends, and a man came and spit on the Buddha. And the Buddha just looked at him and said, "And what's next?" And all of the people around the Buddha were furious, livid, like, we have to get this man or put him in prison or, you know, tell him, does he know what he did to this person? And they said to the Buddha, "Aren't you so upset with this man?" And he said, "Well, the only people I'm upset with are you. Like, we don't know who this man is or where he came from." So in this moment, he is doing something because he has something to say that he doesn't know how to say.
Mm.
And so when I ask what's next, I'm giving permission for him to be in this present moment saying what he wants and needs to say. It's not a slight on me. It's actually a slight of the man on himself.
Yeah.
And so it's just such a beautiful awareness that we constantly think people are doing things to us. And truly, people are doing things to themselves in the mirror that we are reflecting back to them.
Yeah.
Our opportunity is just always to say, if someone hurts us, if there's a moment that doesn't feel good, it's not to say, let me be a doormat and say, oh, well, like, that's okay because I'm so spiritual. It's the moment of saying, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with them going through their own experience. And my job is to say, how that made me feel is my responsibility. Yeah. The action that they took is theirs.
I love to say internally, like this kind of blessing inside that just says, do you, boo? Do your path. It is holy and sacred and important for you to do it. So you do that. What I know about myself is that my heart can't get broken, right? My soul can't get tarnished. I am, what is inside of me can never be hurt or destroyed.
Spirit is not in jeopardy. It's not never in jeopardy. That's the thing. We think that we actually create in ourselves a sense of unsafety when we try to control others. Because we create this circumstance where if I was living in a world where, Kristen, if you said A, B, or C to me, I would get really, really hurt. If you did A, B, or C to me, so I have to control our relationship to make sure you never do those things. And that's going to cause me to live in fear and anxiety.
Yes.
As opposed to me living in a way that says, I take care of myself and my safety. And if and when things come up that hurt me, it becomes my opportunity to learn, why did that hurt? What is that? What is there for me to look at in myself? What's unhealed in me? Where is the little unhealed child in me that is trying to communicate that she needs me to be a better parent for her?
That's, I mean, and isn't that everything, right? And that's where the real relationship work comes, you know? It makes me think about how Dr. Shefali says, in order to meet the spirit within your child, you have to become the being and not get lost in the doing.
Yeah.
So the same is true, right? In our creativity, our careers, where are we just taking action instead of responding from the spirit within? So there's this ability to drop in to the beingness of ourselves. And we don't know how to do that, like whether it be with our children or in our relationships or in our creativity or in our dreams, because we're actually not used to being attuned with our own inner selves. So like you were saying, something might come up and it say, how is that asking me to reparent my own inner child? We are so used to not spending time inside our own being, our own spirit, that then we actually can't be present with another being. Like I cannot attune and be present with your being and really show up and be present if I don't know how to do it with myself. And then I can't be present with the spirit inside of this creative project or the spirit inside of my career if I don't know how to do it within myself, right?
Yes.
So if I am so used to getting stuck and lost in distraction inside of myself, that's going to manifest in my outer world.
Yes.
If I can't sit and just be with me and attune to my own heart and my own inner world, I can't do that for my partner. Right. And so when we can't do that, then is when we get stuck in form and we get addicted to doing. Like I get addicted to hustling in my career. I get addicted to wanting to, you know, whatever that thing is with your partner, right? That whatever that form element is, we get addicted to it because we haven't actually learned to be.
Right. I remember having the experience where I used to have this really deep fear of people leaving me.
Oh,
right. And not even just romantic partners, like, or I would choose romantic partners where there would be no way they would leave me, or I would like create that like ego of safety that like, I'll pick the person that like for sure will stay forever. Right.
Yeah.
Or even like with friendships or with jobs, or there was always this like really innate fear of it would go away. They would go away. I would be left alone. I would be left. And it was really interesting because as I got much deeper in my meditation practice, I would realize that I would go in to meditate. I would go in to be with my spirit. And I was always out. I was always like, I wonder what time it is. I wonder what someone else is doing. I wonder if there's an email in my inbox. And I had this really conscious awareness of, I keep having this continual fear of abandonment because I am always abandoning myself. And it's easier to say, well, other people keep leaving, but the one who was always leaving was me.
Oh, Nat, and that's good.
There was so much healing for me in saying, how dare I be sitting with the divinity inside of me and think that wondering what's in my email inbox is somehow more interesting than that.
Yes.
And if I'm not willing to spend time with myself, how dare I demand a partner to want to stay with myself?
Yes.
And I remember going through this process of this deep work of saying, so my job is to check in with myself all the time. And it started manifesting in really interesting ways of I would just notice how I didn't have a lot of opinions. Like, Natalie, do you feel hot or cold? I don't know. Do you want to eat this food or this food? I don't know. Because I actually wasn't spending enough time with myself to even know what my desires were. Yeah. And so I became, and part of us teaching on pleasure and desire was me unpacking this and getting enough time by myself where I could just start to, as I call it, follow my muse, where the inner child or the inner inspiration or my inner creativity was saying, Natalie, I don't know why I want to walk in this path, but let's do it. And always there was some amazing miracle.
Yes.
When I would walk down that path. And it was really about everything I wanted to blame the world for, everything I wanted to blame my career for, everything I wanted to blame a partner for not giving me, every time when I really went in was something that I wasn't giving myself.
There it is. That's what this whole talk is about. That's the whole thing. I identify with everything you said so deeply. And I feel like the way that mine manifested is I have always had partners that I could not control for the life of me. I mean,
for the life of me,
again and again and again. I mean, name something, I have had it happen. And what I realized is I was always looking for someone to love me because I was never taught how to deeply love and be with myself. So if you don't know how to really love and cherish and value yourself, then it really becomes important that someone else loves and cherishes and values you, right? You don't want anyone else to go because you want them to reflect back how precious you are. And mm-hmm. It was like, life was like, hey, guess what? The universe, the divine was like, we can do this all day. We yes. can do this all day long. So where is the place where you hold yourself as so loved and so precious and so beautiful and so desirable, it doesn't matter if anybody stays or anybody goes. In fact, it's really fun to be with you on such a deep level. Like, you love you so much that everything else, it's just gravy. It's just, yeah. it's just everything else is just extra blessings.
Yes.
And the form of it never matters because it becomes about who am I being in every interaction, and it's never dependent upon anyone else's behavior, right?
Exactly. I remember, you know, we've all heard the thing of you can't love somebody until you love yourself.
Yeah.
We've all heard that so many times. You have to love yourself first. Yeah. Self-love is the first love. But I remember reading this intimacy book that Osho wrote, and it was talking about, well, the reason you have to love yourself is because if you don't love yourself and someone else loves you, gives you real love, you will only ever see it as false, as mm-hmm. a manipulation. You will say, well, they can't possibly love me because they don't know the real me. Or if they only knew this about me, they wouldn't really love me. Or you won't be able to believe in and therefore receive that love. And inevitably you will have to push them away, which will only prove your unlovability.
Yes.
Which will then make you have a more difficult time loving yourself because right. now you have reinforcement from the outer world that you're not lovable.
Yeah, you've reinforced that idea. It's like, it reminds me of parents with their children. When a parent really needs to be in charge and really impress their will upon a child, all you're going to get is a child who's like, uh-uh, I ain't playing that way. You can't do that to me. No, thank you. Not at all. And our careers will do that to us as well. So anytime that we get in a place where we're trying to dominate or impose our will, we're going to get that backlash of like, uh-uh, this isn't the way you play the game. You surrender to what is happening and let yourself be led. So in every encounter with your career and your creativity, it's a deeper opening. It's a deeper listening. It's a deeper attunement. It's a ability to bring the freshness of your spirit to it.
Yes. I always think it's, it's like I catch myself all the time saying to myself, how cute that you think you know better.
Yes.
Right? Like I think about it with my career or with my dreams. My dreams are so huge. The things that are possible on this planet that any one of us at any time have access to on the quantum field of unlimited possibility is so huge. How cute that I think my little mind knows the best route to the mountain. You know,
yes.
It's like, or even with a romantic partner, it's like you look at this person who you love and adore and value, and it's like, how cute that I think I know better how you should be.
Yes.
Or how you should treat me.
Yes.
Right? Like, I don't even know how to treat myself. I'm just learning how to take care of and love myself. How dare I then try to instruct you how to do it?
Yes, of course. You know, Dr. Shefali calls it getting stuck in our egoic image. How things should be as opposed to being with something of how it is, right? And she says that whenever we're locked into an idea of what it should look like, we're stuck in our ego. It's like, oh, okay, oh. And so that moment that it happens, we can go, I'm in my ego. So whenever we find ourselves getting triggered by how our agent is treating us or how this project is turning out or what this collaborator did or how what's going on with some sort of romance, whenever we find that trigger, that's our ability to come back to self. And go, how is this here as a gift to help me, to bring me back to wholeness and let me confront my undeveloped self?
And it's so fun with creative projects too. And whatever you are like working tooth and nail to make happen, whatever actually happens always comes out the back door. It's like, yes. You know what I mean? It never happens the way you think it's going to, the way you plan it to, you know, like you never win the award for the role you think it's going to be.
Yes.
You know, the project you put all this money and time and energy, whatever. And then there's this other one that you kind of throw away and that's the one that becomes really successful. It's just fascinating that we get in this egoic image with everything. It's about, you know, like the perfect family portrait,
yes,
you know, of how you behave and what's appropriate and how you act. And we get so stuck on what things look like, we completely ignore what it feels like. And the feelings are actually what points us to what really is going on here.
Right. You know, I've talked about this before on our podcast, but of course, miracles will talk about, we get so focused on this frame, right? This beautiful gilded frame, as opposed to what's inside the frame. And what's inside the frame is the being, but focusing on the outside, right, is the form of it. And the Course in Miracles says, whenever we're focused on that frame, right, that what it looks like, it's death, right? So when we find ourselves being triggered, we have the ability to ask, what in me is being triggered, right? Oh,
yes.
There's a part of me that wants to be chosen. There's the part of me that wants to be loved. There's a part of me that wants to be validated. There's a part of me that wants other people to think I'm smart. There's a part of me that wants to feel worthy. And now I have the opportunity to love that. Now
right.
I have the opportunity to reclaim it in inside.
And being the best parent to ourselves and to our dreams is saying, let me be the one to give that to you.
Yes.
When I see inside of me, oh, there's the place in me that really wants people to like me.
Yeah.
Oh, but Natalie, you don't like you.
Yeah.
So isn't the greatest healing not in contorting to try to make other people like you, to try to become something you're not so people prefer you? Wouldn't the real healing be in saying, what is it about me that I don't like so much? And maybe that's what needs to be healed.
That's it. In fact, Dr. Shefali talks about how the child never needs fixing. And so what if we were to extend that idea and free our partners and our career and our creativity from ever needing fixing? Like fully let going of the part in us that wants to fix, control, and produce. And fix, control, and produce is a phrase that she says. And when I wrote it down, I was like, produce. Oh man, that one just gets me at my Achilles heel because I always want to make stuff. And she's,
yeah.
Can you let go of that part in you that wants to produce something? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know, Dr. Trapali. Ah, because I do.
I think that that's a really fascinating thing of when we look at our, say, our romantic partner, mm-hmm. and we want to fix something about them.
Oh, man.
It's very common. Like, yes. If only you changed this little thing, you would be better, right? How deeply would your relationship with your partner, if you're in a relationship right now, or with your child, or, you know, with a niece or nephew, or with a best friend, how would your relationship change if every time you looked in their eyes, you looked at them with the eyes of, there is nothing about you that needs to be fixed. There's nothing broken about you.
Yes.
And anytime my eyes, my mind sees brokenness in you, sees something that needs to be fixed, can I remind myself that I am projecting my own brokenness onto someone innocent?
Yes. And I'm running away from my own brokenness. And because I'm so afraid to look at my own brokenness, I am fixated on yours.
Right.
And that's what it is. You know, it's like that ability to go, I see you as perfect and whole and complete, not needing any fixing at all. And so that when I see that come up in me, it redirects me to myself. And so what's really interesting is, when Dr. Shafali talks about children, she says it doesn't mean that we don't do anything, right? It's not like, so now I just sit on the couch and I eat popcorn and I watch TV. But she says what is called for is that we bring our presence, and check this out, we create conditions where the child can thrive. Whoa, we create conditions where they can thrive. So imagine if our only job with our creativity and our career is to be present and to create the conditions where it can thrive.
Right.
Well, doesn't that change all of a sudden who you're being? Not what you're doing.
Of course it does.
Who you're being.
Yes, because here's the thing. If we go to the fixing,
How
many actors, for example, do I know who continually perpetuate, I don't have enough auditions?
Yes.
Well, so that is saying there is something wrong that needs to be fixed.
Yes.
And as long as you are in that mindset and that focal point, it is impossible for you to create optimal conditions for your career to soar, because all you're doing is complaining about what's wrong with it. And that's not creating conditions where your dream can flourish.
That's right. Like, and so imagine also, like, if you did that with your romantic partner, my only job is to be present and to create conditions where you can thrive. And I'm saying, even if that partner has just left you, even if that partner has said, 20 years of marriage, I'm out the door. Even if that partner has fallen into addiction, no matter what's going on, you say, you are on your own path. My only job is to bring my presence and to create conditions where you can thrive, and create conditions where I can thrive, and that both can coexist, right?
Yes.
And that is to hold one in each hand.
Exactly. And it's actually so fascinating, because when I was going through my divorce, that was exactly the conversation of, we were able to take each other through 14 years of life together in a way where we flourished and helped each other get to the next phase of each other's lives. And when the day came when we realized we would both grow and evolve more in each other's absence than each other's presence, then the only loving thing to do was to part in that form.
That's right.
So what a lot of people in my life saw or worried about was a death or something breaking or something going wrong, we were saying, no, this is actually just the next phase of how we can love each other best.
Yeah.
And we can love each other more fully by releasing each other rather than trying to control each other because we said we would stay.
Right. You release the form.
Exactly.
So that you could focus on the energy. And by doing that, Dr. Shafali says we move from the egoic to the essential.
Oh, I love that. We move from the egoic to the essential.
Yes.
In my notes, when you wrote that, I just put wow in capital letters with a lot of stars around it. That really spoke to my heart.
I it's so funny. I wrote down when we were working through this, our relationships want to be free from the shackles of pleasing our ego. Mm. Our career wants to be free from the shackles of pleasing our ego. It's so funny how, man, the ego gets hell bent on this career or this thing that I'm doing. It wants to please this ego. And every time that's going to take us away from our spirit. And I have fallen into that trap so many times. I'm like, I just want to be like, learn from my pain. Anytime I've ever chosen a project or something to do because my ego liked it, but it wasn't in alignment with this is what I must say on the planet. This is who I came to be on the planet. I am effed. I am effed in the A. You know what yes. I mean?
Well, you and I just recently had a really powerful experience of this where you and I've been working on this creative project together for mm-hmm. like a year and a half.
Yeah.
And one thing that we loved about this project we were creating is we were creating it completely in our voice,
yes.
almost as if you and I were just like talking and being girlfriends and silly and having fun. And we were creating this project together to really represent who we felt was our authentic voice and our authentic self. And it was interesting because as we were kind of putting this project out to various people, the feedback was, oh, we love it, but like less of that.
Yeah.
Right? Like less of the girlfriends, less of the jokes, less of the, right? And so we kept kind of trying to take the notes, but at the end of the day, we were just, but that's our essence. That's what we want to create. And so we had this idea of maybe this particular project wants to be in a different form. And then we had an idea of what if we transformed this idea into a totally different form, and it's just been green lights
and open doors and easy,
and something that is going to be bigger and more abundant and more fun and more exciting for us than the first form of it ever would have been.
Yeah. In fact, the first form kind of felt a little heavy and we got closed doors all the time. And it felt like, you know, how last week's podcast was, what am I doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Didn't it feel like that with that project?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
What are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
But actually it just wanted to be released from form to be something that actually was more light, more buoyant, more fun, more exciting, more thrilling, more in alignment with who we are. And life is always trying to be like, hey, I got another idea. Can you release that form? Can you release right. that form?
Could we not think it was something that needed fixing? Could
yes.
we instead see it as what's new here?
What's new here?
What is this rejection trying to teach us? Where is it trying to lead us? If this door is closed, then there is another open door. It's just directing us to that other door. And how can we get curious about what wants to be revealed?
Right. Well, isn't that the thing with partners? So a partner betrays you and leaves you and goes off and says, I'm in love with someone else. And all you want to do is say, they're wrong. They did something wrong, blah, 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 blah. Point the finger. Right. But actually all that's happening is you're being liberated to find something else that is so much more in alignment with you. And then that leaving you was the best thing that partner could have ever done. They freed you. They're freeing your spirit. They're helping you like, find something that is a better fit for you. It's a moment of celebration and rejoice. So if we could get out of the feeling of I need to blame you or you need to be different, we could actually see that everything is a present. Dr. Shefali says, I love this. Often children are only validated when they meet our imagined needs. I love the phrase imagined needs because of course in miracles will tell us that all of our needs are imagined.
Mm-hmm.
She says that parents are often broadcasting, I want you to be happy as long as you fit my idea of what that should look like. So don't we all see parents who do this sometimes? They want their kids to be happy, but only if that happiness fits their idea of what it should look like.
Like really good grades or mm-hmm. whatever the circumstance.
And then we, so turning that question around, can we validate our career and our creativity even when it doesn't fit our ideal image?
Right.
Right?
Many people say, well, I'm only an actor when I'm, on a set.
Yeah.
But you're an artist. You're an actor every second of every day.
Yeah. Right?
And can you release that you are only an artist, an actor, a chef, a parent, when you are in a certain form of that? And
yes.
Can you just say that that is actually my being?
Well,
I am being that thing all the time. And there are going to be times when I'm doing it a lot. There's going to be times when I'm not doing it a lot. There's
yes.
going to be times when it's busy, when it's slow, when it's working, when it's not working. Can I not judge any of it and just say my artistry is always intact no matter what the form is?
No matter what the form is. And the same way, my love is always intact no matter what the form of our relationship is. So you can decide to never talk to me again and move to China. But that does not affect my love, because my love, as I know, is eternal. It's never ending and it can't be damaged. It is the essence of who I am. And anytime I am not acting out of that place of unconditional love, I'm not only betraying you, I'm betraying myself.
And when we say to our dream, you are only worthy of my love when you are in high performance,
mm-hmm.
then we are saying to ourselves, I'm only worthy of love when I'm in high performance, and we set ourselves up to suffer.
That's right. And we set ourselves up for a standard that, because we can't see what's happening. That's the thing. We don't know what's going on. Like
right.
how many people have had their huge success at the brink of bankruptcy or the brink of,
yes.
we don't know what's up. Like we have to let go of judging things, because we really never know where the miracle is.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Shefali will talk about the reason that we want to, control things, and we only want to validate things when they look like the form we think they should, is because we are terrified. She says it is terrifying to be without this idea of success. And she says it's because we are afraid of nothingness. Mm-hmm. So we're actually afraid that if we let go of controlling things, right? If we let go of needing to validate outer experiences and such, we'd have to sit with something inside, which is inside having this fear of lack or not enoughness. And so all we're ever going to get is things that redirect us back to the place where we can sit and face that fear head on until we realize it isn't real.
Right.
It's not real. There is no inner lack.
And life will always direct us back to the nothingness, because it wants us to know how safe we are.
Yes.
How loved we are, how complete we are, how whole we are. So our lives will get emptied out if we resist.
Yeah, if we don't actually make the time for emptiness, we'll get emptied out.
Exactly. So yeah. it's like you can go willingly or you can resist, but you're going to have to go.
Yes, that's right. We have to be willing to sit until we find out that not only are we unconditional love, but we are unconditionally loved by the universe.
Exactly.
Right? So if we can willing to sit with ourselves long enough, we come back to the same thing. And that is how we come back to, we become developed, self-realized and whole.
Oh, mm-hmm. Dr. Shefali is no joke.
She's no joke. So we get this opportunity to go from this moment on, I'm going to meet myself with unconditional love, and I'm going to meet everything in my life with unconditional love. And that it also, everything holds a secret to my transformation.
Everything. I just love the idea so much of, if there's nothing that needs to be fixed, mm-hmm. and I spend much of my time looking for problems to solve, then what happens to me energetically? What gets freed up inside of me? In that space, what becomes possible when I now have all of these reserves of energy to focus on love, joy, opportunity, possibility, activation, desire? What happens when I stop trying to fix everything and I see everything is already fixed, or if it feels like it's incomplete, knowing that the universe is already working on that on my behalf? Then I free myself up to just enjoy my life, enjoy my talent, enjoy my creativity, enjoy my relationships, enjoy the day, enjoy the sunrise, enjoy the sunset, enjoy every moment, because I don't have to be the parent that is controlling the situation.
That's exactly right.
I have a parent, a divine parent, who's got it all taken care of, and I just get to play.
And now we have the conditions to rise and to thrive. Exactly. That's what happens. When Natalie was on
that container, that's the container from which your dream can be expansive in the world because you have become expansive.
That's right. And so because you no longer need to control it, the divine can actually work through you in limitless ways. I got so excited when Natalie
was on that. Can you believe I kept my focus?
Yes, you did. I was dancing up and down so much because she was on such a hot riff. And then our friend Rebecca came behind the Zoom screen and flashed me her magnificent breasts. And then I got so inspired, I lift my shirt up and Natalie kept the strong downloaded focus with like two pairs of boobs in her face.
Do you know what? Because there was no problem to be fixed.
There was no problem to be fixed.
I got to just enjoy the boobs.
Listen, conditions to rise and thrive. That's all we're making here. That's all we're doing.
Recipe for thriving.
You know, it's so funny. God, I mean, recipe for thriving. There have been so many times in my life where I have innerly flogged myself and punished myself because I thought that would make me better. I thought that would make me become more whole. And all I was doing was emulating a parenting style that doesn't work, that was given to me, that was passed down. And yes. so by inwardly telling myself what I was doing wrong or beating myself up, I was actually creating the conditions where I shrunk, yes, as opposed to could expand. So that the new inner dialogue that I'm, you know, there's a meme that was going around of like making your thoughts beautiful is inwardly just working on pointing out to myself all the good. Yeah. Like, you know, Kristen, I am so proud of you for that, the generous comment that you said. I'm so proud of you for showing up today. Oh, Kristen, I notice how strong you are. I notice how, I love how silly and funny that you are. Like, I love this part about you. So that I'm always trying to create the conditions now where that I can thrive because my inner parent is one who loves and supports her.
Well, I have found in my own process that something that's been very important for me to face is that motivation that comes from punishment is actually just a form of mental illness.
Ooh, mic drop, Natalie Roy.
That we think if we punish ourselves, that will motivate us to be better. But all we are doing is asserting how flawed, how wrong, how not good enough we are. And at best, we can overcome unworthiness and we will never know ourselves as our true authentic self. And that to me is a mental illness because we are ill in our minds when we don't know our wholeness.
That is right. We're ill in our minds when we don't know our wholeness. Ooh, so let us just come back to that place of wholeness and say, you know, there was a saying that I saw going around that was like, self-love is the new rebellion, right? That if we have been raised in a society that talked about original sin, that talked about you were flawed from the get-go, and I think we want to bring back the gospel of original innocence and perfection. There's nothing to fix. There's only the ability to open ourselves more and remember our innate divinity.
That we are not a problem. We are actually an answer to a void that was in the world before we got here.
I mean,
we can see ourselves as this profound answer of the world needed Kristen Hange and no one else could do it but her. And you showed up on the planet in California with all your big rad curly hair and big smile and ideas and passion. How can that be a problem?
I don't think it is. I just think it sounds like Christmas. I don't think it is. Natalie, you make me so excited when you say all these deep things. Like, I just want to take my clothes off.
I know. I have that effect on people.
I know. Like, I literally already flashed you. And when you were just talking, I wanted to take my pants off. That was my inner desire.
Yeah.
Oh, we better route.
I know where Joy is.
You know where Joy is. You know that when my booty is free in the world, I'm joyful. I feel like we should close this podcast before I have any
midnight.
More. Yeah, before midnight and before I get any more naked. I think my little brother is coming to pick me up so that we can go celebrate my older brother.
I love it. I love it. Well, I hope this week that there's so many beautiful of Dr. Shefali's messages that you presented that I really do think that as a practice, anyone could take any one of these messages and apply it. And I think your entire life could transform. I think the one that sticks out for me that I want to keep with me this week is there's nothing to fix. When there's a long line for coffee, there's nothing to fix. Mm. When the subway's broken down, there's nothing to fix. When, you know, I don't get that audition I want, there's nothing to fix. My career doesn't need fixing. My partner doesn't need fixing. My schedule doesn't need fixing. It's just me bringing awareness and love to a situation and seeing where the growth opportunity is. And so whether that's a great practice for you or any of the other things that we mentioned this week, just have fun being a beautiful parent to your dream and knowing that your dream actually has everything to teach you.
You know what, Natalie, hearing you say that, when you let go of thinking there is anything to fix, then all of a sudden you can notice and be aware of all the beauty and perfection that is.
That already is.
That already is.
And then you get to know yourself as a perfection that already is.
Oh, I'm just beauty and perfection.
That's all you are, Kristen Hange.
That's all you are, Natalie Roy. All right, now my pants are coming undone.
That's it.
that's what's going to go down now. We love everybody.
Thank you so much, so much for tuning in. It amazes us that we get to do this and have these conversations with each other and with you. And if you loved this conversation, come over to our podcast and throw some stars or reviews at us and let us know what you love, or come to our Create Community Facebook page and give us ideas. If you want us to do a podcast on a specific topic, we love that. So if you have stuff that you're jamming on in your life and you want us to talk about it, nothing would bring us more joy.
And if you also love this, feel free to share it with a friend. We love to be passed around.
Also, we have a fancy, shiny new website. And if you have not been to it, there are some pretty gorgeous, sexy pictures of us on there. So you may want to go and check it out. It's really fun. And that's thecreateseries.com. You can join our free mailing list and get a free downloadable morning practice. You can also find out about our online courses. You can find out about Kristen's writing class that she's about to start. You can find out about all the things that we're up to, when we're teaching again, about our retreat in Italy. If you want that last spot, there's lots of fun stuff there for you. So we would love you to come by and check us out.
You're whole and you're perfect. We love you. Goodbye.
If you want to know about the Create Workshop Series, you can go to
www.thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to know more about us, you can go to kristenhenge.com or
natalieroy.com.
And if you want to come to Create, you can go to
the Actors Green Room in New York City. And it is Sunday nights from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And their website is www.theactorsgreenroom.com. And you can buy Create on demand if you don't live in New York City.
Woohoo!